The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and what's a hambofop? By popular request, by the way, can I say this just to blow a little smoke at the start of the
yes, please
conversation we're having, both literally and figuratively. Justin Hamilton, by the way, is here if you don't know. But I had a slow start to getting back into podcasting. There's been a lot of shit going on in both of our lives, and Charlie has been great. He's been lightening the load for me a little bit. Willosophy isn't back, and I don't know when that's going to come back. And even getting to FOFOPs has been really hard with everything else that I've got going on a whole bunch of levels, both personally and professionally. So funnily enough, Dave Anthony and Gareth Reynolds were both coming to Australia to do the dollop. And I thought, well, you know what? That's good. Great. There's 2 weeks. Fucking done. Bang them in. 2 weeks done. Dave and Gareth, good regulars on the podcast. They've got something to plug. They'll be happy to do it. You know, I can get that done. Then I do an episode with Cam James because Cam's been working with me on a few projects that I've had, and, you know, we've formed a little friendship. And I've you know, we've had Cam on the podcast before. You've been on with Cam on the podcast before, and he's a very funny guy, has a whole bunch of his own very funny podcasts. But had him on for a FOFOP, and look, I won't go into the details of why you could only listen to that episode if you downloaded it in the first 12 hours. All I will say is you could only listen to it if you downloaded it in the first 12 hours and you'll never be able to listen to that episode again.
This is interesting. So, are my lawyers working overtime and not telling me what's happening? That's
so it is very nice to get to talk to you. Everybody was in my mentions and DMs saying, when are we going to get a hambofop? When is Justin back on the podcast? So that is a very long-winded way of saying, welcome back. It is nice to see you, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. It has been – it's the 1st of May and it feels –
What year?
2027. What's your best guess? Like, you know, it's – I don't know. Like, I have a keen sense that even though we've had kind of different things going on, it feels like there has been something. And sometimes that something isn't the worst thing in the world, but there has been something every 7 to 10 days. To the extent that even when something good happened, I'd think, all right, what's about to come next? You know, like as an example, I got money refunded on my BAS statement, and that has never happened. Like, in the history of me putting in BAS statements, which I do every quarter, I've never had a refund. I was so confused. I called my accountant. I said, you know where it says refund? Does that mean I'm getting the money? And he was like, yeah. I was like, sorry, it's just like you're speaking in wingdings. This makes no sense to me. And I was like, great, maybe this year's turning around. And the next day I got COVID. And that's just how the year's gone.
I could not agree with you more. Like, I am, like, the last end of 2021.
Yeah.
For a project that I am doing, one of the various fucking projects that I have on the go at the moment that all seem to demand my attention in the same 2 weeks of this year.
Right.
There is a piece of that was written in 2019, and I read over it the other day and was like, I was like 2019, I'm so fucking glad this year's over. What a shit year.
Yeah. God, I miss 2019.
Oh my God. Yeah. If I could go back to the glory days of the end of 2019, I would be so happy.
Yeah. If I could ring 2019 and apologize for the way I treated it and say that I've learned and I've seen other years since, and you know what? I'm a better person now. Let's go
I
back.
I was wrong. Yeah. You were fine.
You were great.
I was absolutely wrong. I've been out there on the market. I have not liked what I've seen.
Yeah.
20, 21, 22. Don't fancy any of them.
No, not at all. This year in particular, I think this year is the year where collectively the world went, let's all have a nervous breakdown. Yeah. And it's like everyone's cheese has slipped off their cracker, and it's at this point now where the most insane people are the people who don't realize they've gone insane. If mm-hmm. you can embrace that you are a little bit strange now and that you're a little bit weird, maybe you can ride it out a little bit. I know that I'm definitively slightly loopier than I've ever been. But also in that process, feeling quite calm about it, because it's like, oh, yeah, I see what's happening here. It's the people who are like, no, I'm fine, as you're looking at their wardrobe on fire that they just did because they wanted summer clothes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're in Gotham when everyone's starting to become a supervillain.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's that point in the evolution of the city. The whole world feels like, no, people are just going to become vigilantes and fight crime.
Yep.
There's going to be all these people dressing up as supervillains. We have that version of what's going on at the moment. Like, I've said this ad nauseum, but I find it just like the most demonstrative example of the times in which we live. 2 years ago, I heard somebody joke about this like 2 days ago. They were just like, ha ha ha, remember Donald Trump? They were talking about AFL, this person, and they were like, the AFL's got to have the policy that Donald Trump said. You just less tests and there'll be less people out of the game.
Right.
People laughed at Donald Trump when he said that, rightly so.
Yeah.
But that is now the policy around the world.
Absolutely.
What Donald Trump said 2 years ago has now been accepted as the official COVID policy. And to me, nothing says more about the times we live in that the plan, the madman, the supervillain, the Riddler came up with 2 years ago is now actually just the way we're living day to day in Gotham City.
Mate, it's the Wild West out there. It's the COVID Wild West. And it's fucking,
and like Elon Musk, and like it is just feels like this is the time, because like the tech companies,
right?
Like if you want to talk about like, you know, indulging our worst impulses, like these are the companies that have made their fortunes on knowing what appeals to us at our basis, right? Like, you know, whether it be like pornography or entertainment or like music or having things delivered to our home or just anger, you know, arguing, like being involved in the discourse, having an opinion every day, like getting hooked into the infrastructure. Like they had 2 years where we all just sat at home and got like even more hooked into their infrastructure. And now they're all just super wealthy in a way that, like I was reading the other day about the amount of people. I think before the pandemic, there was one person who had $100 billion. Now there shouldn't be one person who has $100 billion, right, but now there's nine.
Yeah.
There's nine people who have $100 billion.
Yeah.
Like there's only been 108 billion humans who've ever lived.
Yeah.
That means that one of those dudes could literally just give like a dollar to every human who's ever been alive. Now, that'd mean a little to us, but you go back enough years, a dollar would be pretty handy.
There's someone in 735 AD who's about to buy a mansion.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And it does feel like exactly what you're saying, that in this world where caution is not the prevailing narrative anymore, like that those who are willing to take big risks regardless of where they sit within that infrastructure, like are the ones who are being rewarded by the times in which we live.
Oh, yeah. And also there is, there's not only the insanity at the top levels of what they do with their money and their aims. Like if you look at Richard Branson, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, we are essentially looking at the real world of Tony Stark, Bruce Wayne and Lex Luthor. And it turns out, why are we celebrating these characters in pop culture? Because in the real world, they are fucking awful. But then we also have things where people are just so not aware, like the war in the Ukraine, and a big shout out to having those old 80s nuclear war anxieties. I thought I'd lost touch with them, but it's good to be back in touch with them. That's been really sweet. But the fact that you have someone like President George Bush coming out and saying, you know, you can't invade another country under false pretenses, and you're like, sorry, is this an SNL sketch? Like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, that's exactly what you did. And you can't make that argument because it's like, oh, you support the war in the Ukraine. It's like, no, I don't support that. But I also didn't support this. And that lack of self-awareness, once again, that's part of the insanity of where the world's at.
I find that with the conversation around the election and this reverence, this is the sign of the story of incompetence successive, like, governments in Australia have at least if that's the public narrative. Like, you know, there are probably more successful people and less successful people. But this idea that John Howard, They roll out John Howard. Like, he's like, oh, Yoda's come to fucking, yeah, like, join the conversation. Like, look at this revered elder. You were wrong, mate. Yeah. You were wrong. And you've been proved wrong. Yeah. Like, he's the dude who changed, you know, marriage to be between a man and a woman to enshrine heterosexual marriage into the Australian Constitution because he believed that's what Australia was all about. Well, guess what, mate? We're not.
Yeah.
Like, even the people who voted for you didn't vote for that. You were fucking wrong. Go away.
Right.
You were wrong. Right. And that's not the only thing you were wrong about. But right, history has proved you wrong.
Right.
Like, we have the evidence that that was not the correct decision. That was not the thing that the Australians wanted. So fuck off.
Yeah. There's the satire I'm looking for. But, you know, I blame Hugh Jackman for all of this because Hugh Jackman. Well, like for many things.
I mean, I do, but why do you? You tell me why you do, and then I'll see if it's the same reason I do.
Well, it was because he was on American talk shows talking about gun control and how John Howard, you know, after the awful stuff that happened at Port Arthur, and he came through and implemented that situation, which was, you know.
That's true.
That was like, a good move.
Oh, you know what? I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
If they're rolling you out. Right. To talk about gun control.
Go for it.
Happy to have Big Johnny at the conversation. Wear your Australian tracksuit.
Yeah.
Nice to have you here, Mr. Prime Minister. I'll be polite to you like I was that day when I sat next to you on the plane. So, I mean, admittedly, I was spending the entire journey trying not to vomit.
You were hungover.
And when I say try not to vomit, I mean vomiting and trying to pretend I hadn't vomited.
Yeah. So. A core skill that you have developed over many plane flights. But that clip went around, and you know, because everyone consumes their media in, you know, 30-second grabs or whatever, then it was suddenly like, you know what, John Howard, not that bad, he did that.
But also, here's what I would argue in regard to that. Absolutely 100% I agree. Did you see that movie Nitram? Did you watch Nitram?
No, I haven't.
So I did not think that I would like it.
Right.
For people who don't know, it won a whole bunch of awards, and it is essentially the story of the Port Arthur killer. And I say the Port Arthur killer and don't mention his name because they don't mention his name in it either.
Yeah.
The title Nitram is his first name backwards.
Yeah.
And that is, like, you know, where that comes from. And I think that was one of the great decisions they made in it was they really did. And there's no, like, the, anyway, without giving too much away, I was incredibly impressed at how well they did, like, telling that story in a way that was not, that had some empathy to the story of how, you know, like, I think we have to be challenged on this idea that we just think people are born evil and then someone goes and shoots people. That doesn't solve any problems. That doesn't help us stop that person before they do it if we just imagine that they're just, like, evil in some, you know, heaven and hell, Satan took them over, you know? It tells a little of a story of how somebody might become what he became without ever siding with him in a way that, like, I would have been. It deserved everything that it got, in my opinion. I think you would really like it. And I think even if you didn't like the movie, because it's like, in a way, you can't really like it, I think you'd be really impressed at the choices they made in their storytelling.
Yeah.
I think you'd sit there a lot and just go, oh, yeah, okay, good. Oh, well done. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
There's been a couple of times that I've gone to watch it and, like, you know, there was one night I was going to watch it and I went, you know what, instead I'm going to watch this 1979 180-minute Russian movie that's an existential sci-fi flick because I wasn't quite ready to watch Nitram.
No, I get that too, right?
I'm going to watch this really dour Russian film in subtitles and then I'm going to work my way up to this.
Okay, it feels just completely unmanageable. I've just gone back and done a month. Well, I didn't do a month at the Comedy Festival because, of course, I missed the first week of the Comedy Festival because of the floods. I was flooded in. But then I went down and did 3 weeks. And that was the first time I've done 3 weeks anywhere since 2019. So. Right. That was interesting in itself, but the experience, like having been to that comedy festival for, you know, over a quarter of a century, you know, the big question was always going to be, is it back or are we still in this, an in-between period before we're back, if we're ever going to be back in the way that we mean when we say back? It's certainly not back. Right. It's so different.
Right.
To what it was. Like, it's so different. Like, I mean, about a third of the audiences aren't there, which I totally understand. You know, there's, oh, I got to be honest with you, with the life I was living between gigs, you know, I'm not doing anything else. I didn't go and see anybody else's shows because I was paranoid about being exposed to COVID and missing a week of my show. So yeah. I imagine if you're a person who has a job or a family commitment or any of those sort of things that you don't want to lose a week off, or, you know, you just don't want to get COVID because you're in a, you know, high risk COVID, you know, demographic, then you've got to go, fuck, I've got to wait for some really good reviews of this show before I decide that I'm going to risk my life and go in and check it out. So I don't judge the people who stayed away in any way. I am incredibly grateful for the people who came. That's actually more what I am. But 10% of the shows went down. In between, everybody was really – I did joke that it's the best year ever to have seen a show. If you were one of the people who actually said, I'm going to go out and, you know – see shows, then you probably saw more good shows this year than you've ever seen in your entire life. Because not only was everyone incredibly grateful to be back, the performers, you know, nobody was taking it for granted, even in incredibly difficult circumstances. It, you never knew when you went on stage if that was going to be the last night of your run.
Right.
And you're right. So every night you wanted the show just to be as good as it possibly be, because what if they cancel it tomorrow and this was my last show?
Yeah.
And we all know what it feels like to, for your last show to be 3 weeks, 6 weeks, right. Suddenly nine, you know, do you mean like, you know, that idea that, and then no one's really partying. No one's like socializing or partying. Like every day I'm like rocking up going, actually, my voice feels fine. Maybe I don't have throat issues.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Turns out just doing the show and getting some sleep and not hanging out with anyone is really good for the health. Yeah.
If you just treat it like a job and it's your only priority for your whole day, it turns out it really reflects well in the show.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You got there.
But the thing that I really want to emphasize is that at my end of the market, like, if a third of your audience goes, there's still a good substantial amount of audience there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a newcomer, it's like somebody starting out in the festival, how difficult is it to get somebody to, you know, in that risky environment, to take a risk on someone where they don't even know if the show's going to be good? Am I going to go out and expose myself to these things, you know, really on a flight of fancy?
I would say probably that if you're a newcomer, you're probably fine, because when you're a newcomer, your friends still go to see you perform. But I reckon it's I reckon it's that big in between.
Right.
You know, the 4 years in to...
Yeah, when your friends and family are like, fuck this shit.
Fuck this, he's terrible. Why have I been seeing him for 4 years? No, I'm good now. You should come now.
Yeah. But you're right. I do think you're right about that. But I... That end of the market, because so much of doing a festival at that point is the socializing, not just in a, this is fun, but you get to make connections, hang out with other comedians, form bonds, all these sort of things. But you get to see, it can be more, you might like lose $1,000, but Geraldine Hickey came and saw your show and she can't stop talking about it. And eventually that turns into like, you know, a segment on a radio show or whatever it is, you know, you go and support her on the road or something like that. And that might really be the start of the next bit of your career. Whereas for so many of these acts, I just don't think that, I mean, the comedy industry professionals, you saw them, they were still obviously going from show to show and like actively engaging. But I do think it was incredibly difficult for that end of the market.
Yeah, it looks extremely difficult. Like, there's a possibility, and I'm like, I'm not saying that this is a definite decision. This is just an instinct at this point.
Yeah.
But you know, I kind of think that maybe my festival days are done because of, you know, like I was kind of wavering a little bit anyway. But seeing all of these pressures, etc., it's like I've got to find other creative outlets for that don't revolve around me spending a lot of money, you know.
Oh, mate, like I would recommend against it at the moment. Like if you're hesitant in any way.
Yeah.
Even if you're, I've never said this to newer comedians, but even if you're a newer comedian at the moment and you think, this is a high risk and I actually would rather put my time and energy into my podcast or my YouTube series or my TikTok or whatever it is that, you know, you're getting some traction on.
Yeah.
I would almost recommend to them, say, you know, certainly, yeah, just do it every second year for a while. So, yeah, wait for it to come back. Don't put so much pressure on yourself. It does feel like it is a different world that we live in. People are much more used to getting their entertainment through technology now anyway. Like, live might never be what it was, you know, in the mix of what a professional entertainer and comedian's career is, I don't think. Like, right. I think that this idea that it was predominantly live.
Yeah.
So I'm fucked because I loved it. Yeah. I could not have loved it more. I've never had more fun. Yeah. Like, literally the best show I've ever fucking done by so far. Right. Like, even if, like, I'm sure there'll be individual people who saw it who'd liked different shows, and that is absolutely, you know, great. I'm glad that you did. But for me, knowing what it is that I wanted to achieve and what it was that it landed, I've never been more proud of what I've done. I just felt like I did not know if I was going to be able to do a show. And for the last 2 years, I've agonized so much about what my stand-up would look like and feel like when I mean, we've had those conversations endlessly. I had so much time off and I'd never had time off before. And so I just, like, I beat myself up just, like, you know, just endlessly going over and over what I liked and hated about what it is that I did and what I was trying to achieve and where my place in the industry was and all those fucking things. And then I just wrote this show that I liked and I was just like, I don't actually give a fuck. Like, I hope people will like this, but I'm just going to write a show that I will enjoy the shit out of doing every night. And I did about a week of shows where I was like, oh, geez, like, you know, and then about halfway through the festival, it just kind of fucking hit its straps one night and then it just never stopped being good. It was really good.
Yeah.
It was like, there was just times where I was just like, I mean, even, this is very indulgent, but like, I mean, what's a hammo fop if not for being woefully indulgent? But there's a UK comedy Bible called Chortle that people, you know, may or may not be familiar with. It's one of those things that comedians...
Bible?
It is the Bible. Okay. It is the comedy Bible.
Right.
In the same way as the Bible has its strict adherents and non-believers, I would suggest.
Yeah. Oh, well, it looks like I'm an atheist there as well, but keep going.
Well, I have also previously been an atheist. In fact, I have, you know, like been reviewed by Steve Bennett, who's the dude behind Chortle, the main dude behind Chortle, and he's a guy who just – you know, loved comedy and wanted to be a comedy reviewer and has managed to build this website that is, you know, at least the best known and, you know, kind of most respected but debated and resented and all these sort of things as, you know, basically on whether you got a good reviewer or a bad reviewer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether you believe in it or not, it depends on how blessed you believe you are in the eyes of God.
Yeah, so. I quite like Steve. I've had good reviews.
And the thing that I would say about him is that he sees so much comedy that the comedy that he likes the best is comedy that isn't necessarily the more mainstream comedy.
Right.
That makes complete sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, you see a lot of it. You obviously, after a while, are like, I know what the tricks of the mainstream stuff are. I want to see something that actually surprises me. And I think sometimes in the past, you know, I've certainly been someone who's like, oh, I don't know if he's seeing everything that I'm trying to do, and I could never work out whether that was on me or him, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, he fucking loved this show.
Right. So classic Ando, Bennett, great guy.
But, I mean, got it in a way. This review, I could have fucking written it.
Right.
Like, he got he mentioned that there was various themes, that they were like kind of all underplayed, that it was like this sort of, like, all the things that I thought I was doing, the bits of the story that, like, he even had a thing in it that I hadn't articulated in my own head, but I knew something was in a place for a reason.
Right.
And I hadn't actually, I was just like, I know it fits there, but I haven't actually intellectualized why it fits there. It feels right in that spot. And he had this line in his review. I was like, oh yeah, no, that's why it's there.
Thank you.
You're right. That is why it's there.
Quoting this review to explain to other people what I was trying to do. Yeah, great.
Yeah, it was, Like, I mean, it was really fun. Like, it was fun that he got it, but it was fun that audiences seemed to really get it. I'm in Sydney this weekend, by the way, when people are hearing this. Friday and Saturday I'm doing Willogical, and then Sunday night I'm doing What You're Talking About, Will. And then I've got Brisbane election weekend if you want to come and see the show there.
Great.
Yeah, I know. Saturday night, election night, I'll be on stage doing Willogical.
A slightly different version of the show, potentially? Or
I've got the... Here's what I say. I've got the improv show on the Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
So. Right.
Yeah. Funnel them to the improv show. It might be political.
You'll get my reaction regardless. Yeah. Regardless of which way it goes, you'll certainly get my reaction.
I have a wedding on the day of the election.
You what? Getting married? Well, no. We haven't spoken for a while.
No. God damn it. Yuck. that is not happening. No, Rob Hunter, our friend Rob Hunter and Kate Johnson are getting married. So heading down to Melbourne very briefly for that, which will be my first time in Melbourne for a heck of a long time as well.
So what else has been going on? Like, we both had some computer troubles, I believe. So
hilarious. Talk me
through yours.
So it turned out my desktop was running slow, and I couldn't work out why, because I thought I'd only had it maybe 4 or 5 years. And then I looked at it, and I'd had it for 9 years. And it's like, that's 40 years in computer years, you know. So I went and bought a new desktop, and what they don't tell you is the things that have logically changed in the last 9 years. They just say, this is the new version of the desktop that I used to have. So, classic, okay, I'll do the transfer over. 4-5 hours into it, it stops, and you're like, fuck, I must have just kind of lost. That's so annoying. So you start doing the transfer again, 4 or 5 hours into it. You know, you wake up the next day, it's stopped, it can't do it. Give it one more time. And then there was just this really fun moment where I worked out if I could justify buying a new desktop after I threw this one out onto the street from my third floor apartment. I thought I might hit someone down below and it's not their fault. So I could have called Apple support, but I've got something much better than that, and it's Adam Richard support. So I called Adam, who came over, and he couldn't work it out. And it turns out, and this might sound really dumb to people who update their computer every couple of years, but it turns out the new desktop has
less memory.
Right. I did not know this. I just figured it would be the same amount of memory.
I mean, it makes sense that, like, it would have less than the one you bought 9 years ago.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. So got all of that sorted. That was fine. Great. And then I was at work, finished the day, and was leaving with my laptop, and my bag got knocked over, and somehow the tip of the water canister opened up and not only poured water into the bag, but over the top of the little compartment into the bit where the laptop was. Funnily enough, I'd had the laptop since 2015, so I took that in, they had a check, and then they brought it back, and they'd taken photos of the inside, and there were so many red rings around it. It was like someone whose English was their third language getting their report for an English test. There were so many red lines at that, and it's like, now I have to buy a new laptop. So within like 4 weeks, you're setting up a desktop, you're setting up a laptop. Not the biggest thing in the world, but just when there's something every week, it's like, now I have to do this. And I'm trying to say to the guy, just warn me. Is there something I need to know? Is there something that I need to be across? No, I made sure I was setting everything up. And then at some point, without me knowing, they decided to sync. They didn't tell me about that, because that's how Skynet works now. They just sync up, and then you're looking at your laptop and you're deleting things, and you're looking at your desktop going, where did that go? Anyway, it's not a big deal, but it's just something that was so time consuming. And thank goodness I just live by myself, where you can just in the middle of, stop something and go and have a 45-minute shower to make sure that you calm down, before you come back to it. It was insane. But once again, mundane as well. Insane, but mundane. What about
insane
you?
Insane in the mundane. It's my favorite Cypress Wheel song.
Yes.
end of last year, in perspective now, I guess just it was the start of a bad run of things, but at the time, it felt like I had had a very tough end to the year. So, like, some major things had gone badly. And then my fucking computer. My fucking computer just decided one day, I'm not going to work. And I only had, like, a laptop computer. I didn't have a desktop computer, so it was just my laptop. And I was just about to go into summer where I really needed to, like, do some writing, you know, try to put this new show together. And they told me it was going to take 6 weeks for the new laptop that I was going to get. And
They didn't have them in stock or something? Or
yeah, there was, because it was coming up to Christmas.
Oh, right, yeah, of course.
So basically everyone had already ordered their computers. So for me to get this new computer, it was going to take like 6 weeks for it to come in. So I went 6 weeks without a computer, which was interesting. Yeah. Like, you know, that's not true. I obviously used AB's computer and stuff. It's not like I didn't have a computer for 6 weeks, but not like, and then I thought that they couldn't save the memory file on my old computer, which would have made setting up the new computer very easy. Instead, I could salvage stuff from the cloud, but it didn't seem that everything was in the cloud.
Oh, that's fun,
for reasons that I could not quite work out.
And because there was of a stuff.
Couple of, there was a couple of annoying things. I was like, is there another cloud?
Yeah.
Is there another cloud hiding behind this cloud where that stuff that should be in the cloud is? Is there a chance I've got two clouds?
Yeah. Like, is it the band the Clouds? Have they gone on tour with my computer?
Because I've seen them several times. They shouldn't be, you know, fucking with me this way.
Yeah.
I've supported them.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
When I was at uni and I didn't have a lot of money either. Yeah. The clouds. Come on. But, yeah, I don't know if there's an extra cloud or I have, like, a secret cloud, but there's definitely some stuff that I thought would be in the cloud that now seems forever lost to me. But I must admit, I've talked about this so often on these podcasts, but I have this unhealthy fascination with the idea of these people who are, like, involved in a train accident and whatever and take that opportunity to start a new life.
Oh, yeah. Why wouldn't you be?
I mean, there's something about them that I just every time, I don't know what it is, but there's something about that that's really appealing to me.
I wonder, like, I fantasize about this all the time without the train accident bit. Just the bit where you ring and the phone, like, you're talking to Limo and you're like, hey, I've been trying to get in touch with Justin. His phone seems to be disconnected. Oh, yeah, his emails are bouncing back. And then, you know, one day, you know, 7 years from now, you go to Guatemala on a holiday and then you go to get a coffee and it's me with a pencil-thin moustache and you say, how am I? And I look at you and I wink and I point to my badge and say, no, yeah. Manuel.
Yeah, no, El Hamo.
El Hamo, yeah. I'm totally into it.
Yeah, I don't know what that says, but I think that it is definitely, it's been in my thoughts a lot recently, which is, I think particularly before doing these shows, because now that I've done the shows, I actually really feel engaged in this idea of, like, what I could be doing with my work and my stand up. And I, you know, that's been really enthusiastic. But on the bad days, I've fantasized about just, like, having another life.
Oh.
And I mean, like, I'd do it today if you could guarantee me I would be forgotten. What I don't want is someone like me living whatever life that I'm living, wherever I'm living this life, and somebody going, hey, didn't you used to be Will Anderson?
Oh, yeah.
That to me is annoying. Well, I don't want that.
Well,
right?
See, this is why it's so much tastier for me because, you know, all anyone's going to say to me is, hey, did you used to be Ben Elton? I say, well, it's funny, I used to get that quite a lot, but no.
Like it happened to our friend Peter Hellyer. Let's bring that in. So our friend Peter Hellyer the other day on the internet, a rumor went around the internet that Peter Hellyer was dead.
Like the worst few seconds of the year for me. Like because I just saw it come up in Google Alerts and it kind of came up and then had that moment of dread. Like, it was like the anti-Dave Hughes trending. Do you know what I mean? Like, Hughes, I only click on just to make sure he's not dead. And then, you know, he said something insane, like, oh, yeah, Hughes is being Hughesy. But now, this one, I was like, holy shit, clicked on it, and there was a photo of him going, eh, yeah. And I was like, okay, this is a terrible
The first
rumor.
One that I saw was not that. I saw somebody tweeting about it as if there was a possibility that he was dead. Now, their tweet, their tweet, if he were in fact dead, would have been, I would have thought, bad taste. Like, when I read it, I was like, oh, my God. Like, firstly, is Peter Hallier dead? And secondly, that would be a really bad taste tweet if he was dead. So immediately I was kind of like, I don't feel like, I feel like this is going to be a joke about something, right? So my immediate thought didn't go to, oh my God, Pete's dead. My immediate thought is something's happened and someone is making a joke about the idea of Peter Hallier being dead, right? Like, so then I like to put in, I make the mistake of putting in Peter Hallier, and this is pre him doing his like drinking a beer, I'm okay thing, right? Like, it must have just happened. And so I go to this feed and there is like a lot of people making mean jokes about Peter Hallier. Like,
oh yeah, Pete was telling me.
So since I have heard that he read them all and he was like, this, I just died.
I'm dead.
And people are like, and as we know, Peter Hallier, you couldn't like think of somebody who is a nicer person, like a family man, good-hearted comedian, incredibly generous, works well with others, nothing but like a hard worker. Like every bit of his success he's had in his life has come from like him being a hard worker and like, you know, being super creative and super productive and all these sort of things. Like, I guess that he has a, you know, a mainstream appeal that like is easy to make fun of if you're the cool kids in town, and I understand that, but like, and he probably understands. I mean, in fact, Pete, I think more than anybody would both understand and have a sense of humor about that. But to wish him dead, like to be gleeful in the fact that he is dead, he's not your guy. I understand when I die, there will be some people who will be rightfully gleeful in the fact that I am dead. Yeah. And I enjoy pissing you off while you're here on earth. And if you are joyful in my death, then touche, bravo to you. I'm not around to hear about it. So everything's fine. But Peter Hallier, like honestly, if I can make any public service announcement, Peter Hallier is a nice guy.
He's a really nice man. I have not seen him in years. And he texted me on Friday saying that he was in Sydney at the store and would I like to come down and race there after work, and got to hang out with him for a few hours, and it was such a delight.
Love stand-up, you know, still goes and sees a lot of new acts, but supports his mates as well. Like, he's most likely out of any of my friends that if I get a message from Pete at the end of a festival and say, hey, I came and saw the show, like, that's, just wouldn't surprise you, because that's a Pete Hallier thing to do. Like, so, but what I was thinking, back to our other conversation, was if it went around the internet that I was dead, I would roll with it.
Right, yeah. Well, this has turned out quite well.
Thank God. This day has finally come. Yep. There would be no photo,
this is the opportunity.
No photo of me with beers. I would be plotting how I could disappear permanently.
Yep. Yep, you'd be straight into the bathroom with some scissors and some hair dye, and you would be going full Bourne. That's how it would be working. You'd get be able to finally use all those fake passports that you've been holding for this moment.
I mean, basically, I just have to record a few things that my like estate can cash in on. That's what I really need, right?
Right.
Like, I need to like die.
Yeah, you need the vinyl box sets of all your shows that can gouge.
Okay,
your fans
So I have to record this new show, and I have to record Will Eagle. That's a good box set, a posthumous box set, and then I can just do some deal with my estate where I get like a percentage of like future sales on the event of me being dead. When people get when they get the box set. That's good. I like this. This is great.
You need a vinyl box set of every 5 years, and you release them every 12 to 18 months, and about the 16 to 20 year, you then just release five of your, what are you talking about?
Oh yeah,
Willis shows, and you just release them as a box set, and you release them as there's only going to be a few of them, so a limited run. So then people start. Then you don't release all of them. Then you release some of them on eBay, really gouge your fans, and then you get back to the box set. Sorry. I'm talking about this from experience, from the David Bowie estate.
No, this is why I'm coming to you first. I mean,
I'm telling you, this is the way to go.
I want the whole Bowie package, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get you in the room to bring the Bowie things. I'm gonna get Tupac's mum. I'm going to get the estate of Jeff Buckley.
Mrs. Pack.
I'm going to get them involved. Anyone who's managed to wring additional dollars out of the death of a prominent artist, I'm on board.
Sell your back catalogue to Warner Brothers.
One of those Martin Shrekley, one-off things that somebody has to buy.
Yeah, everyone gets really annoyed because Elon Musk buys it. And it's only because it's a whole show about Elon Musk, and that's why
I could do that. Actually, that's good. All right, these are all good ideas. These are all going straight on the whiteboard.
Yeah,
1 hour about Jeff Bezos going to space. One about Elon Musk.
Yeah, one vinyl copy. One. That's it. Put it up for auction.
If they're going to be the richest people in the world, we might as well make entertainment that is specifically targeted at them. Like, I mean, maybe I should just make an entire album about Elon Musk, and then I go on the internet and go, I've written an album about Elon Musk. Elon, do you want people to hear this? If so, people bid on it, and Elon, you bid, and whoever has the highest bid can have the album.
Yeah, so Elon Musk is getting it. So it'd be great.
Well, maybe not, though. Like, maybe Elon Bezos buys it. Yeah, Bezos buys it to burn Musk.
Yeah, great. We set them up against each other. Their stock goes down.
Oh, you know what?
We liberate the world.
I do two albums. I do one about Bezos. I do one about Musk.
Yeah.
And I say I'm only releasing the one that has the lower bid, right? So whoever bids the highest, I trash that entire show. Yeah. It goes away.
Yeah. It's foolproof. I don't see where anything could go wrong here. I've been meaning to ask you because this is because things have been so crazy. I just haven't even had an opportunity to give you a buzz. But did you see The Batman?
I did see The Batman. I actually did see The Batman. I saw it just recently. I watched it as they would have intended on my computer. on the Oaks Wi-Fi in Melbourne.
I saw Matt Reeves talk about that. he did say it was specifically.
He said what he's done with the movie to create the mood, what he'd like is about every 8 minutes the internet to stop working for 30 seconds so you could really reflect on the mood and then try to pick up the mood again.
So you didn't mind that it was 7.5 hours?
Great. 7.5 hours. Well, I mean, I was doing nothing else with my day. Yeah. I had to fill it in somehow, I persisted. I watched actually two movies. I only have one observation about the Spider-Man movie, and it is this, which I assume you've seen, right? So my one observation is I didn't feel like I actually lost anything watching The Batman on my computer. It was easy to get immersed in that universe. I thought they did a really good job of creating a consistent and immersive feel and universe. The Spider-Man movie, on the other hand, there were bits when they revealed, by the way, spoilers if there's anybody in the world who does not know that this is the reveal in the Spider-Man movie. But anyway, it turns out there's a lot of cameos.
Yeah.
And the moment where they reveal Daredevil, which to me, you know how much I love Daredevil.
Yeah.
And you know how much I love Charlie Cox playing Daredevil.
Yeah.
To me, they leave a pause. Like a politician making a speech and his assistant has written under a joke, pause for laughter.
Yeah.
They leave a pause for in-cinema applause.
Yeah.
And that is fine in the cinema.
Yeah.
But when you're watching that on your computer on Oaks Wi-Fi, you're like, has the Wi-Fi gone out again? Why is Tobey Maguire just standing there for 30 seconds while nothing really happens?
Yeah. No, that was great. That was the Spider-Man movie, it's a bit of a flat film for me. It has a lot of...
it's an amusement park ride.
Yeah, and it has... I think what it does have is really good acting, but there's so many moments where it's like you're revealing that it's Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, and that's so... technically, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
But they visually decided to tell us by opening up a CGI hole and show him in an alley. And you go...
Yeah.
What did I just experience? See, I saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, and that is the most inventive film I have seen in such a long time. The audience was laughing when you saw comedies in the 90s? It was like one of those, everyone was invested. Do you know this film?
I'm familiar with the film Everything Everywhere All at Once because... firstly, it has one of the best titles of any movie. Like, absolutely. That's that feels like if I didn't do Will puns, what I would have called my fucking stand-up show this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm like, I don't even know what the movie is about. Right. And that title was exciting to me. But the other reason I know the movie Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is because every single person that has seen it has raved about it.
Oh, so yeah.
I can't remember when, like, to the point where I've purposely, like, not read anything about it or whatever, because I just don't, like, I actually need to see it as a bit of a surprise because, like, if there's this much hype, I don't want to spoil what everybody else is feeling by going in with my expectations up too high or anything like that.
And I will not say anything technically or, like, specifically about the movie, but from a creative point of view, when they were writing it, you just know there was never any point where someone made a suggestion where the other person said, I reckon that's too much.
Yeah, right.
And I loved that. And there were so many moments where you were just sitting there thinking, is this really happening? Is this really happening in a cinema, in a film that I'm watching? And then suddenly there would be this moment of poignancy where you'd be, the cinema went silent and you could feel people overwhelmed with emotion. And it was saying something really important about the way we live and life. And then it would just swerve straight back into something that was even more absurd than what you were experiencing before. After the movie, I was talking to my friend about it. And for days afterwards, we would be sending text messages saying, hey, we didn't even bring up blah, 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 blah. And it just kind of kept giving. And so that was a movie on a tenth of the budget of Spider-Man. But it also had so much more visual panache and direction, and it's had so many more ideas. Like, I'm seeing Doctor Strange on Wednesday, and I have a feeling that Doctor Strange is going to be fine compared to this.
I mean, probably. All the Marvel movies are just fine now. That's fine. Like, that's what we've, like, they're McDonald's now.
Yeah.
We've just got to, like, they're going to be around,
yeah,
and they'll keep coming out, but I think they're all just going to be fine from now on.
They're fine.
Like, occasionally you'll just get one on the right day where somebody gave a shit a little bit more than another one and they'll be better than fine. But they'll mostly just
be
fine.
They'll just be mostly fine.
And the Spider-Man, I know, because Spider-Man is Sony, obviously, as well. So it is a bit of a different thing. But so to bring it back to the Batman, like, I personally had little to no interest in, like, watching that film. I just was not ready for a new Batman film.
Yeah.
Just did not need to see it, did not think that there would be anything interesting that they could do with it. And I've got to say, I really dug it. I thought it was
really
cool.
It was really good.
I really like, I mean, I didn't mind that it was long. I didn't mind that some of it's kind of slow paced. Like, I actually was like, no, that's cool. Like, that's what it's doing. It's doing something specific. I thought the performances were all fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, there was a point in it where you stopped thinking about the other Batman films.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, like, it was very familiar, but at the same time, like, it was its own thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, interesting. Like,
well, that's the thing. Like, if you're going to, so I was like you, when they announced there was a new Batman movie coming, I was like, you know what? I'm fine. I don't need this. And then I saw it was Matt Reeves. And I was like, oh, you know what? He makes quite good films. And then they put in Patterson. And then they put in Zoe Kravitz. And they kept putting Jeffrey Wright. And I kept going, oh, I like all of those people. Oh, I'll go and see it. And what they did so well is, if you're going to do a character that's been around for 60, 70, 80, 100 years, you have to capture the zeitgeist. And what they managed to do was they set up a version of this character that we live in complicated times where even the people that we revere, we know that they've made mistakes. And that's what they did with the Waynes. They made it a very compromised world. It's, in some ways, we kind of don't really want a lot as in layers, so they kind of, instead of, like, I personally prefer a Bruce Wayne where I get Playboy Bruce, real Bruce, Batman, you know, that kind of thing. But this one, it was just a very simple, he's really dark, and then he's also Batman, you know, so that was fine. I thought that was a good reflection. The one thing in the trailer that I wasn't into was that moment when he says, "I'm vengeance." And I was like, "Ugh, I don't know about that." But then that paid off at the end with the one of the Riddler's acolytes. And it was a real statement for me on how we can't stoop to the level of the enemy in the way that we express ourselves and the way that we combat the problems in the world. So I thought that was great. I also
like when he first says it, I agree with you. There's a bit of like, g'day vengeance, I'm dad.
I was like, what's going on? But it paid off. Like, it paid off in a way I wasn't expecting.
But it does. There is a, and thematically to what they seem to be building in, like, you know, these films.
Yeah.
And because even that, I was suspicious of the idea of going, like talking about it being a trilogy already, and like, here's what they want to do with each. But having seen what they did with the first one, I'm now excited that it's a trilogy because you can see that they want to tell kind of three distinct beats of a story, which I think is a good way to do it. Like,
And you know, like, the Riddler is a good villain for these times because he does look like someone who's a little bit angry in his mum's basement. I laughed hard.
Well, you know what I liked about that is these, even the Nolan movies, if there is, and look, obviously Heath Ledger's death was responsible for one of these things, but it really was, here's a new movie, here's new villains. I know that, like, there was the kind of the League of Shadows thing under the whole, but, you know, I like the idea that at the end of this, it wasn't like, well, we've wrapped up with those villains, next time the Penguin's going to be in it. Yeah. Like, it was like, no, we're building towards, yes, the Penguin's going to be in it, but, like, you know, the Riddler's going to be in it, and maybe the Joker's going to be in it, like, and maybe they're going to work together in some way or whatever. Like, this is the universe we're building. We don't have to kill one off so that, like, we can have the next one in the other movie. That sort of world building was very appealing to me because I like the idea of, you know, like, the Batman's dealing with what the Joker's up to, but he's also fucking dealing with what the Riddler's up to, and the fucking Penguin's over here doing some fucking shit as well.
Yeah. And I also have to say, I laughed hard when I saw that the Riddler had his own live feed and he only had 501 followers. And I was like, suck shit. And then it turned out they were super fans and I was so impressed. They all came out. Do you know what I mean? I have so many more followers on Twitter and I have a much lower rate of them coming to see my gigs.
Well, I think, though, that, like, the Riddler has unpacked something that, you know, he will then monetize. That, to me, is a story of our times, right? Like, you look at what Joe Rogan has become, let's be generous, like, and say has become rather than perhaps always was. I'm not sure. I don't know enough about Joe Rogan to make an informed judgment on that. But you certainly look at people like Russell Brand, who, it's funny because you and I have spoken about Russell Brand so much in our lives, like,
it's
in,
really
in
strange.
Real life.
It's
for two
have.
People who, like, aren't even that, I don't think either of us are, like, particularly, you know, have ever been super fans or anything like that, but we've had so many conversations about Russell Brand. He's quite a fascinating character, like, in this universe. But he has, like, talking about people who've embraced the, you know, bananas moment that we find ourselves in culturally, like, Russell's definitely, like, he'd been training all his life to be a fucking guru, and now he's like,
now
that's, now he is.
In his dressing gown clips.
Fuck,
how do I
man.
Even know that? I do.
But remember, we talked about this. So we went and saw Russell Brand in LA.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've talked about it on the podcast before, but and my lasting memory of that gig was that he was incredibly charismatic.
Yeah.
Didn't have a heap of jokes, but he was, like, incredibly charming. And then he was very passionate about us not drinking bottled water.
Yeah.
That's
he really was.
That's like, a lot of the gig was about how bad bottled water was. Yeah. And I remember at the time going, why am I so turned off by this message that I am sympathetic towards? Like, you know, as in, and it was because it felt like he thought he discovered that bottled water was bad and he was the one bringing us the truth.
Yeah.
That none of us had, like, he'd actually fucking uncovered something and he discovered that bottled water was bad and he needed to share that with people. And then I went and interviewed him and he was talking to me about what's that? Dr. Pepper, Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
And he was evangelistic about fucking Diet Dr. Pepper and, like, all the flavors it had and what it was made with and why it was, like, this and that and whatever. And I just started looking at his work and was like, he is just, I mean, he's just an evangelist for whatever it is that his fascination is at the time. Right. You know, that's his, like, if there was women at some stage, he was like a, you know, a sex addict, and he was like a heroin addict, and he's been like a fame addict, and now he's like
Dr. Pepper addict.
Right. And he's like a spirituality addict now, yeah. Like, you know, and a conspirituality right. addict, because it's all about, like, I know the fucking truth. And it doesn't surprise me in any way. In fact, if anything, this is actually, like, I look at what Russell Brand's become with a sense of smugness that about a decade ago, you and I had a conversation where we pretty much predicted exactly where Russell Brand has ended up.
Yeah, like, none of this is a surprise.
If we were futurists.
Yeah.
Like, that would be one of the ones where we were introduced on panel shows.
Yeah.
They're the guys who told us 10 years ago that Russell Brand was going to become a conspiritualist. Because it was always there.
Yeah, yeah.
Does not surprise me in any way.
And he is. He's really charismatic. Like,
so charismatic. For a show, charming, funny.
Yeah, like, that show went for 2 hours and barely had any jokes. And
no.
And he was preaching shit that we had thought for decades. And, like, I was fine to sit there. I'm still having a good time.
Having a great time. Like, he was super charming.
He was really charming.
And, like, when I interviewed him, he was, like, I did a, you know, 20, 30 minute, like, one-on-one interview with him for GQ or something, I reckon.
Yeah.
And super charming. Yeah. I really enjoyed his company. He was fun to talk to. And, you know, it's part of why I find this a bit of a pity, because I think that, like, I mean, I watch some of his videos now. Like, some of them are fine. Some of them are actually, you know, genuinely decent enough thoughts, you know, about the world. And I can see why people find them, you know, entertaining and, you know, thought-provoking and all those sort of things. But there's some of them where I'm like, get back to talking about bottled water.
I don't think everyone's quite getting this.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you, were you able to watch much TV? Like a TV series as while you were in lockdown?
I've been watching a weird bunch of shows, like, at the moment. Haven't really been able to, like, settle on anything. I think that's partly working and stuff. So I've been watching a lot of Survivor and Top Chef and sort of shows. They're very easy to watch in that time. I've been watching a series on Amazon Prime.
Please tell me it's Out of Range.
Oh, so I'm up to date on Outer Range, if you want to talk about Outer Range.
I'm one episode behind. I just watched episode 5 last night.
It's fine. No, it's fine. You are no clearer at your point or my point having watched that episode of what's going on.
So I was talking to a friend of mine who a friend of hers works on a show for Amazon Prime, and they have this AI that goes through and reads the scripts of the shows that they write. Yeah. And then picks out all the, kind of compares it to all the scripts that are really successful, and then gives them notes on what they need to do to improve their script. And when my friend told me about that, it suddenly Out of Range made a lot of sense because
it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
It's an algorithm show.
What the fuck is happening? It's an algorithm. It's like, oh, we need a little bit of Twin Peaks with a little bit of Yellowstone. And you know what people like? They like cowboys who sing. Let's throw this weird ass character into it. Oh, what about a pit? People like Lost. Let's throw in a little bit of that. It's insane.
You know what's exciting? Fargo.
Fargo.
Can we have a bit of that vibe about it as well?
Didn't you love the lead character from the OA? Get Imogen Poots. It's so weird.
It's one of the most, like, compellingly weird shows I've ever watched in my life.
Compelling.
Because
it's so, like, weird.
You like it because it reminds you so much of so many of your favourite shows.
I have lots of good ones. But I can't, like, stop watching it.
It's like a Jive Bunny mixtape of, like, shows. And they've nailed every bit of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when they're being the OA, or when they're being Stranger Things, or when they're being, like, Lost or whatever, all those elements, like, you're like, oh, this is, I know what this is now. This is like a small town crime drama. This is great. This is like Dexter or something.
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, it's not that at all.
No, it's completely different. Every episode.
I don't know what it
and,
is.
You know, like, smart.
Hang,
like,
on, are they really playing poker now? What's going on?
Now,
now
he's a fucking shark at poker? Like, what the fuck is happening here? And, like, Josh Brolin is so compelling. You know,
he's amazing.
You can't stop watching him. And the majority of the cast is really good, but it is bonkers. And I desperately want that son like, who sings in every episode.
Yeah.
I want a spin-off show with that crazy asshole. He's fascinating.
And then like some of there's characters who are clearly in different shows.
Oh, completely like, different shows.
Do you mean where you're like, hang on.
Yeah.
Does this like that? I mean, again, without wanting to give too much away for people, but the sort of the...
I don't know how you could give anything away.
Good point, actually. But the opposition dad, the one who's like essentially... Yeah. Like, he's like a character from... Like he's an old-fashioned like...
Dickens character?
Well... He's Shakespearean or Dickensian, but he's also like an old school sheriff who like fires guns in the air and like it's, I'm like, what is this? What is this?
Yeah.
And he's got the son who's the singing son and then like, and then at the start you're like, I think this is a murder mystery. Oh no, hang on. There's like a supernatural element to this murder mystery. Yeah. Hang on, is it time? There's time travel. There's a boy.
Like, what is happening? It's bonkers.
And the algorithm thing is 100% what it is. Like, I didn't know it was an algorithm, but we had made the observation that it was just like, oh, they've just tried to be every other show.
Every.
And I can't stop watching it. Like, can't wait for the latest. I was devastated when I got through the amount of episodes that I had. I was like, I watched five in a row. I was like, this is... What is this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. TV is...
what is happening?
There's so much... like, I am watching a ridiculous amount of TV shows at the moment, and I always save that one to last because it's so crazy. I don't want to watch anything else that's, you know, mildly normal after it because it'll be like...
I've loved it. Like, because you... Like, at the end, you're not even, like... Like, you know, sometimes when you watch big sort of dramas or whatever the fuck this show is, like... At the end, you feel like exhausted because you've been on the journey with the characters. But with this, you're not even like, it's just like, what happened?
Like, what happened? Even the music choices for the end of the credits are crazy. Like, if you think about it as an algorithm, it's like, oh, The Walking Dead was really big. And the Walker Brothers, The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore is really good. Let's put in a Scott Walker song. Then they pick
the songs.
They pick one of the weirdest Scott Walker songs to throw in there.
Which I love,
but was like, where is this coming from? Algorithm.
The one thing I loved about it, I must say, is that even though it's so different and so tonally different and so, like, you know, different influences or whatever, there is something about it that is still narratively compelling. Because if it was just all those things at once, you would just go, I can't keep watching this. Whereas, like, they have managed to... Like I said Jive Bunny earlier, but maybe what it really is, you know, the Avalanches. They've taken a whole bunch of samples, but then made them into an original song using all those samples. Or at least at the moment, it feels like it might be an original song. It might be revealed to be a giant MacGuffin of some kind. I don't know. I don't know how it can possibly, like, I mean, they can't. It's one of those shows where you're like, well, you can't have answers.
No. It'll be a bummer to get an answer. I want this to go for 7 seasons. Like, if it's weird now, shows usually start off pretty level-headed, and then it's when they go insane.
Where's the Seinfeld episode? Do you know what I mean?
For 3 scenes, there's a laugh track. That's you know, and it would just like... Oh,
that would in no way surprise me in this show. If, like, in... Because there's been a few scenes already that if they'd had a laugh track on them, I would have been like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really sure if this is a thing that's really happening at the moment anyway.
Yeah.
Or whether this is like a dream sequence or like a vision or like a, I don't know what this is.
It's really
The other show I've been watching on Amazon Prime is a show that I imagine, I don't really know. I've never heard any buzz about it at all. I don't think it's really great. But I'm finding it super charming and, like, really comforting, which is a show called Upload. Have you ever heard of Upload?
That's really funny. I just saw that there's a new season. Like, I was just looking at that on Amazon Prime last night, trying to work out what that was, because I think there's a second season.
Yeah. So I started watching – Greg Daniels, who's, like, the US Office and a few other, like, shows that I quite like, Superstore, I think.
Right.
Like, he's made a couple of things that I – have always thought were a little bit better than people gave them credit for, you know? Right. And I am super charmed by this show. It's about like this idea that there is essentially heaven, like, but it's AI, right? So these companies have monetized that you can upload your consciousness and then live in a, you know, a heaven, but it is, of course, because it's in the world in which we currently exist, it is all monetized and there are various levels of, you know, what you can afford to do and live out your fantasies and all those sort of things. And it makes a commentary on all those. And anyway, I really like it. I'm super charmed by it. It's one of those things that has like sometimes quite like, you know, I mean, not wildly slapstick. Is there a, can you have subtly slapstick comedy?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe sparingly used slapstick? Is that
No. You know when, like, it's quirky in a way, like, in that, like, characters are making a decision where if they were in lesser skilled hands, they'd be waving their arms. Okay, so Kramer, right?
Right.
Like, you could go the full Kramer, but the Kramer in this is still doing a character like Kramer is a character.
Yeah.
But they're kind of nervous and subtle, but they're still full of like mannerisms and blah, blah, blah. So it's still a over-the-top performance, a comedic performance. Like it's a choice, but it's done in a much more sort of subtle, but it still feels like, I don't know, slapstick is the only word I can think of, even though it's not that, not what we just like, you know, actually associate with slapstick.
Right. Is it maybe just more physical comedy?
Maybe.
Just taking
and
the
just like
off
maybe
it.
A bit surreal.
Yeah.
Like not story based, or they're not, they're fine because they're in this AI world.
Yeah.
They can take liberties with how people behave or how AI behaves or how the environment behaves. So manage to kind of blend like a traditional, you know, this is how a person would ordinarily behave in this situation with this like excuse to have people behave in counterintuitive ways.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I think it could probably be a weird tonal mix for people, but I enjoy it.
Right.
I like that it kind of feels like it's, I'm like, oh, this is, yeah, right. Like this is, it's interesting.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. I'll put that on the list because I've got a few things coming to an end.
It's light and fun is what I would say.
That's probably what I need at the moment. Yeah. Between, you haven't seen any of Winning Time?
Oh, no. So I'm obsessed. I love it. If I had to name my favorite TV show at the moment, that is my favorite TV show.
Oh, my God. Well, like, you know, like that Lakers team is the first basketball team that I loved. So I am across that team really well. I think they've done an amazing job with the casting.
I mean, the
young fella playing
is
Magic, like that is the guy. Like if you get Magic wrong, I'm out. Do you know what I mean? And he is.
But how do you get Magic right? Well, that's how you get Magic right.
Yeah.
But I forget sometimes that it's not Magic.
Yeah. He's really good.
He's so charming and like particularly because they've chosen to not shy away from some of the like, you know, terrible aspects of, you know, Magic's personality, right?
Right.
Like, and you know, his treatment of women in particular, like, you know, in regard to like, I mean, more in being a player than like, you know, any other sort of connotations.
Yeah.
But you know, but certainly not being respectful of relationships and talking to people and all these sort of, you know, trappings of being a famous person. But he's so super charming with it that you buy it. You go, oh, yeah, this is – like this gives me a really insight into what this character was and how they got away with what they were getting away with because that was who they were and they were super charming and they were like – it's an incredible performance, I think.
Yeah, and also, you know, they're very much – if you want to kind of look at on a deeper level of it you know, he just probably needed some guidance. You know, he's probably getting the wrong guidance. But to me, it feels it is factually so incorrect in some points.
Oh, I imagine it must be like
– like they even changed
– I mean, they make a real point of – like saying that
it's a dramatization, but they even
changed. But if you don't know the story, and because I don't really know the story back to front, for me, I don't know which bits are dramatization and which bits aren't.
But it's like talking to someone who lived an experience and they're telling you about it, and you know, and you're looking at the little ring of coke around their nose. So, and that feels like they're just telling you.
I mean,
you,
this whole
bits,
show has a little ring of coke around its nose. Like, I mean, it wears that on its sleeve. In fact, I think that's exactly what they've gone for, which is this is a Coke-fueled recollection of like a particular time.
Sometimes they're probably doing some of the characters a slight injustice, to be fair, but I'm still really enjoying it. The thing I find fascinating
is
they changed...
What's the major thing? Tell me, what's the biggest thing they've changed that you...
I'm not entirely certain that they're getting Jerry West right. Like, I'm not entirely certain that I need to see the logo having sex with a random person on the night he finally wins the championship. Like, that's pretty insane. But the bit that's really strange to me is they keep changing the scores of games. And it's like, so recently they had a game where Philadelphia beat the Lakers and, you know, Dr. J took advantage of being nice to Magic and kind of put him on his ass and he didn't play well. But part of the fun of the show is I go straight onto Basketball Index and I look. Yeah, Philadelphia won. They won by 1 point and Magic played really well. Like, why are you changing that? You can still have the same outcome. Or in the game against Boston, Magic barely played in that game because he had an injury and it was two free throws by Norm Nixon. But in the show, they changed it to Magic throwing an alley-oop to Michael Cooper. And it's like, I'm not quite sure why you're changing these bits. You know, Jeannie Buss didn't work for her dad right at the start, but I understand why they put her in there because she's our
right,
way
she
into
becomes,
that.
Yeah. That, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, also Spencer Haywood, who, I won't get ahead of myself because you don't know what happens, but having him played by an actor who's 52 is one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time. It's like he was definitely older, but this is a guy who changed the ABA. Like, you know, he's
couldn't,
an important person.
But also when he first like was introduced, I didn't realize he was still a current day player. I just assumed that it was like, because like in the show, you meet him in the context where I was like, this is like a retired player, like who's been out of the game for 10 years, probably working as a commentator. No, your teammate.
Yep. By the way, I'm not entirely certain Pat Riley was a loser, like the word that went up. I don't think he was a loser. No. I think he was just trying to work out what he was going to do next. All the stuff with the coach is not quite right.
I think when you're Adrian, when you've got Adrian
Brody
playing Pat Riley,
yeah,
like I think that you've got Adrian Brody's take on that as well.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like he's doing a bit of his own work.
Yeah.
He's decided I'm going to give you my Pat Riley. Yeah. Like I'm going to show you my comedy chops early on that when like he's got a real, instead of seeing like Pat Riley as like a real person, right? I feel like Adrian Brody's playing him like this is your supervillain origin story. So you get like he was like, you know, the wacky guy doing special comments and just being goofy. And then one day you're just going to see that scene like you saw in Superman of Lex Luthor, you know, shaving his hair.
Right.
That's going to be the sort of like he slicks back the hair and then he suddenly becomes
becomes
the Pat Riley. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, like all of these inconsistencies, I also kind of don't give a shit because I'm really enjoying it.
It's fun. It's super fun. And I think part of it is that all the acting is like, I mean, the guy playing Kareem is
doing a good job.
Fantastic as well. And like,
you know, hard character to get right, you know. By the way, poor Kareem is not very happy about it. He never told that boy to fuck off when they were filming Flying High. Like... Like, that's a pretty brutal thing to add to a character. Jerry West is supposedly going to try and take him to court, but there's nothing like... I was listening to a podcast talking about the legal ramifications of being able to do it, and then it's like, well, they say it's a dramatization. He's 80. It's actually not going to affect his standing future earning.
I was going to say, what is it that he's particularly pissed off about? Do you know?
The
is there
series.
Something... Yeah, right. There isn't like
nothing about it that they're happy about. You know, some of the stuff with Jerry Buss, you're going, well, he seems like a pretty complicated character, but did we need to see that with his mother's helper? Like, that was a pretty grotty, ugly scene in a TV show. I'm like, did that happen? But anyway, whatever. I'm having a good time.
I mean, he is unreal, though, John C. Reilly, right?
Yeah.
Like, he is... What an actor he is.
Yeah.
Because, like, he manages to do like, again, this is like in a different way, but what I was talking about before, which is that is could be on a sketch show as a comedic character, right? Like, yeah. And yet he manages to place that comedic character in the middle of like a heightened real world thing,
yeah.
But a thing where it's kind of being played as if it's the real world or yeah. A heightened version of the real world. And he managed to land what is actually kind of like could be in fucking Step Brothers or something as a comedic character.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of like this, he's good. He's very good.
And there's so many, like Chiklis as Red Auerbach is great. I mean,
just.
Like all the cameos. Sally Field's been fantastic.
Sally Field.
Yeah. It's fun.
I mean, it is really fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like.
Makes me want to do a lot of coke.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that is, it does though, right? And like, and I don't even like doing coke.
Oh no,
but,
thanks.
But you're absolutely right. It absolutely, you're like, yeah.
If someone said we're going to get 5 bags and we're going to go through all 10 episodes of season 1, you'd think, well, I'll probably be dead at the end of it, but fine.
Well, you know, I was like, so Richard Pryor's in a, you know, yeah. in a couple of times, yeah. And I think it was like, I can't remember what the super says. It says like Richard Pryor, notoriously good influence, or something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Because he's invited them up to the hills to a party where, like, you know, they've got lots of cocaine.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that's just going, like, this moment is you're meant to be looking at it and going, fucking Richard Pryor, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah.
Like, don't be, like, you know, like, fucking up this young man's, you know, life and, yeah. like, leading him astray.
Yeah.
But there's another part of me that's like, I would definitely go to that party with Richard Pryor to do cocaine.
God, how much fun would that be? Wouldn't have to say anything. Could just sit back and enjoy the show. What a great way to start the week. You start the week with Winning Time. You finish the week without a range. And it's like, whew, give me the weekend to shake it off.
That's so funny. We should, we got so much to catch up on.
Yeah.
We barely got to any of it. But we also have some other commitments today. So let us finish there. Do you have anything that you would like to plug, Justin? Big Squid, your podcast?
Yeah, I've had some fun guests on. So we've been doing this season, we've been doing a deep dive director series on David Lynch, which has been fun to go back over those movies. We have our regular Space Podyssey where we cover sci-fi films, etc. But I had New York Times bestseller Chris Herring on, who wrote a book about the New York Knicks in the 90s, which was coached by Pat Riley. And I loved the book, got in touch with him and had him on the podcast. And he was a delight. One of those, you know, those podcasts where you think I'm going to get 30 to 40 minutes with this guy. We knocked off an hour and a half. And then when I stopped recording, he told me stuff he was allowed to tell me off air. And he was a delight. So if anyone, even if you're not you can enjoy that book and that podcast the same way you can enjoy Moneyball without being a baseball fan.
And I am doing my show, Willogical, my award-winning show, Willogical, at the Sydney Comedy Festival this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, and then Sunday, What You're Talking About, Will, and then Brisbane election weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Willogical, and then the Sunday night, I got two shows of What You're Talking About, Will, so that is, they will be post-election, so they will be definitely fun shows to come along, but come and see Willogical.
Oh, yeah, and you just reminded me, I actually have a gig at the Rhino Room on the 3rd of June. At the Rhino Room, so you can find tickets for that at adelaidecomedy.com.
Unreal. Thank you very much for doing this, Justin.
No worries. Thank you.